Thank you everyone for staying here so late in the day. I'll try to wrap up as soon as possible. I just want to say that I really feel humbled here because I'm in the company of people I've always admired and inspired by their work. My mother is not here, my mother actually right now, she and my father live in Aleppo, Syria, which is a World Heritage Site being ravaged by war, but they're doing okay. I have three objectives to what I'm going to discuss today. The first is to review, really contextualize the public health situation in the Arab world today, building on the findings of the book. And the second is to move there to discuss some of the challenges in front of us, some of the opportunities perhaps as well, as we face some change in the region, not all of it good. And the third is to really argue for the need for new public health in the region. And this I will connect to the theme of the session in relation to capitalism and socialist forces. I just want to acknowledge actually that although I'm solely responsible for this presentation, I'm building a lot of the discussions on this, and there are 81 contributors to this, and we don't have any particular financial interest in this, we've donated all royalties. Next, please, thank you. Perhaps the defining feature is to discuss the Arab world or the Arab region or the Arab countries is its diversity. Qatar, Kuwait, and United Arab Emirates are ranked 2, 3, and 9 in terms of national income, while Somalia and Comoros rank 191 and 174. So this is an extremely diverse region that we wonder whether whether you can speak about one region here. Nevertheless, these countries are under the umbrella of the League of Arab States, voluntarily decided to be part of that. So we have decided to look at this region as a unit of analysis, knowing that most prior work has looked at the definitions of Middle East, and North Africa, or other combinations, Eastern Mediterranean, that do not really take the Arab countries as a unit of analysis. Next, please. This is where I live. It's celebrated by global capitalism as a success story. But this is also where I live. Next. This is also in Lebanon. So if you walk from the ravishing downtown on the Mediterranean, a few kilometers, you enter you enter one of the Palestinian camps, and you are astonished by the different world that you have walked to if you venture into that. Next, please. The Arab world's population has tripled since 1970, while population and fertility growth rates have actually been falling in the past several decades. This is a region that continues to face important population pressure. Next slide, please. In the context of really severe environmental limitations, this is the most arid region in the world, and it's a region that has substantial rates of environmental degradation. This is, of course, in the context of development models that have increasingly attempted to integrate the region thanks to its oil wealth, and this is not just limited to the oil-rich countries, into the global capitalist system. Next slide, please. So what this has meant is that because these countries have to have a specific role in this global capitalist system, their economic, their economic performance has been dismal. I mean, this is there is no region, including Sub-Saharan Africa, that has done as poorly in terms of economic performance, considering the wealth, so contextualizing on the wealth as this region. And this, you see the fluctuation in relation between the economic growth and oil prices. So, of course, that is well mirrored in the quality of institutions and poor governance in the region. Next, please. Any discussion of health must acknowledge the tremendous improvement that that we have seen in health indicators in the region. So not to just highlight the negatives. So the region next has seen, for example, the life expectancy increase of about 20 years, doubling of school enrollment, and these have actually. Have these improvements have happened in both in the countries, the republics that have followed socialist policies such as Syria, Algeria, and others, but also in the countries of the Gulf, which invested tremendously in social infrastructure, most importantly, education, health, and nutrition. But if you take into account issues of inequality, then you start losing sight of those benefits. You lose 70% if you take gender inequality into account. So on a human development indicator, the United Arab Emirates would be high up in the 30s and then drops down to the 98th rate when you take into account the issue of gender inequality. The same would be in relation to education and many other factors. We continue to have unacceptably high levels of poverty. These inequalities between countries are reflected in the amazing range of health indicators. So maternal mortality rate ratio, for example, can range a hundredfold. Under five mortality can range 10 to 15 fold. So really remarkable inequities. Next, these, of course, inequities are reflected in within countries as well as between countries. The health burden is, as is counted in a lot of international WHO and other meetings, reflects a transition to non-communicable diseases, but there is very little attention to the fact that you continue to have a huge burden of ill health related to conditions of the poor, nutrition, malnutrition, infectious diseases. Next slide, please. Anemia up to 30-40% in some countries. Really a development emergency, so to speak, if we are to really label it as it is. A lot of people who are continue to be hungry, especially in the least developed countries. Next. Population groups. These slides are actually taken from Rima Habib's chapter. She was here in the audience, which is on the health of special population groups. With the focus on population averages, a lot of these groups go under the radar screen, are not reflected in the international literature. Next slide, please. Now, when it comes to health system, we can spend a whole day talking about resources, but from an equity and rights perspective, perhaps the defining feature is that in low-income countries, there is not enough investment in health, not even in health services, let alone in the social infrastructure that could lead to better health. With spending less than $40 per person in the least developed countries, just there's just not enough to improve population health. Now, next slide, please. This leads to about 5% of people suffering catastrophic health expenditures and about 1 to 2% being impoverished because of health expenditures. Next slide, please. Now comes here the subject what I wanted to engage really with you in discussion today, because this is a work in progress. The book was actually finished before and went to print before the onset of the popular revolt in the region. So the question is, now that you are up against a social movement in motion, right in front of you, you are part of it. And this is perhaps the dream of a change-oriented public health person. And you want to be part of it, and you see great possibilities coming out of this. Next slide, please. And we've actually are in the process of reflecting on all of these issues. What these popular revolts mean. I just came from a meeting about 10 days ago in Detroit, where we discussed these issues. And actually, next slide, please. The issues that came up are more concerns about what the current changes have brought, rather than about what actually transpired that can support a brighter future for public health in the region. In Tunisia, and here's a reverse global capitalism at function. The Islamist parties actually, because they've always blamed the strong state for oppression or so, are now advocating dismantling public health programs. And saying, well, you know, our parties can provide social and health services. Let the civil society do this. The state must withdraw. This is more or less the equivalent of the reaction that happened, I guess, on a much broader scale, a much more severe scale, after the socialist policy of Nazi Germany, where there was a reaction against this. The good thing about what's happening in the region now is that the populace is not necessarily going to let this happen. They're not necessarily in favor of dismantling the state in favor of certain political projects. In Egypt, the current government is reintroducing a health insurance law that was pushed by the World Bank, the IMF, and others in Egypt unsuccessfully over the past 10 years back into the parliament for discussion. In Yemen, our colleague Butaina from Yemen discussed how the Ministry of Health, and that shows you the importance of health institutions as bastions for corruption, as bastions for the status quo, are actually have been the least affected in terms of reshuffling, reorganization, and removal of symbols of corruption in Syria. My colleagues, my family describe how the health system is actually an instrument of state oppression. The Minister of Health reported, for example, to the WHO that in August of last year there were only 6 arrested health professionals. Well, I know at least more than this, that myself, you know, who have been not just arrested but killed. So, in a sense, the Minister of Health, through opening the doors of hospitals to security agencies seeking those injured through the street demonstrations and the others, so really are participatory agents in state oppression. Now, there's a history to all of this current situation. While we have seen tremendous improvement in health indicators over the past few decades, these were mostly related to the need for post-colonial Arab state to gain legitimacy, not necessarily as a project of building social equity, as a project of reducing inequity. So it was more of an investment in ruling regeneration of new ruling elite. To a certain degree, aligned with newer economic classes emerging in the country, as well as with the global capitalist system. Next slide, please. Now, we have long argued actually that this issue really has to be looked at in the domain of the politics, as you always do. Now, it's interesting, when you talk politics and health in this country, they come very natural, because it's on television, it's elsewhere. In many parts of the world, the world politics and health don't come together in the same statement. They don't come together in the same program on television. It's almost a taboo to discuss the politics of health. Livia Wick, for example, previous slide. Livia Wick looked at a 4-decade issue for journal, looking at the how health is reflected as a political construct, and came to the conclusion that compared with what Morsi, for example, did in the 1960s and 70s, bringing a Marxist analysis to the forefront of health, we today have more depoliticized discourse on health than we used to have in the past. The most striking case comes from Egypt, whereby Shukrullah and his colleague Khalil describe how in the 1960s, after Nasser in Egypt introduced socialist reforms that would have become a world experiment in action on social determinants of health, creating these rural multi-sectoral units where you would have an agricultural resource, a health unit, an education unit, several units all integrated in one. The medical elite actually aligned with mostly urban and aligned with the bourgeoisie in Egypt actually put a block in front of Nasser's reform and started a trend that would pretty much undermine health systems across the region, which is the trend of dual employment in the public and health and private sector. And imagine what this means, Howard, for draining transfers of resources from the public to the private sector. Next slide, please. So we're coming back to from that history to the current moment, and ask ourselves: are these social movements going to bring change to the region with a focus on health that we all can identify with? Well, the answer is so far has been very mixed, and in many circles, many would argue negative. However, both Huda Rashad and I, next slide please, have argued that this is actually dependent on taking the role that health professionals need to take in order to make public health actually the avant-garde in pushing for the change. And we argue this, next slide please, we argue this actually in an article many years ago when we were still dreaming about the possibility of change in 2006. So right now the change is upon us, but the challenge is that we can't catch up with it. So the change is quite dramatic, quite profound, and is associated with a lot of problems. So how can we catch up with this is the challenge of today. Next slide, please. So I would just go down brief. Let's go down quickly for this because there's not enough time.
Right.
So the issue here comes down to one issue. And I guess I come down here to what Howard has mentioned, to reclaim the state. And I guess we, you know, emphasizing the same point, is that the state is not necessarily just this monolithic outside structure. This is part of our societies, and this is why we need to claim this. And this is the challenge of today. Next, please. So our major challenge in public health, as we see it back in the region, is to move from the current approach that dominates public health to a new public health. Next, please. And this new public health really is a political project for change. It's a state project for modernity. It acknowledges class, works on the issues of class. It looks at health as a positive construct. I was really amazed to hear you talk about mental health in the book. Lina Smail wrote a chapter, she's a psychologist, wrote a chapter on omitted context. How hidden paradigms, how the international discourse on mental health has omits context and hides the paradigms that would actually be promoting the use of medications and mental illness. Next. Now, how do we move forward with this agenda? And this is where we need your help and to engage with you. It's very difficult for health professionals to make the impact they need to make on contributing to this change and being the change, considering that we have less than 10 schools of public health in the region. Most public health is biomedical in the region. It's attached to medical schools. It's practiced by medical practitioners. Your minister of health is a surgeon, is an eye doctor, whoever the last person who took care of the president or the prime minister, last week or whenever. So the bottom line is that this is where we really need the partnership to move together in this. Next slide, please. There are things that are happening, but let's just go quickly through this for sake of time. There are things positive that are happening around the region. Our colleagues continue to share with us important developments, but they need the support in all of these countries in order to actually push forward. What we have seen, interestingly, what we have seen in the past 2 years in the region is that there was an initial surge in international interest in the region, and then that interest seems to die off as development didn't turn to be as good as they should have been in the region. Well, this is the reality. It took the French Revolution 100 years to accomplish the principles, its main principles. It will take the region many years, if not decades, to really move forward. But this is where international engagement on the principles of justice and right and equity need to be to come forward. So this is where we've launched the Public Health in the Arab World initiative. It's actually, the book was never really the aim of our work. The book was to be a product of an ongoing work that we are doing and we have been doing for a long time in the region on trying to promote a new public health. So we hope to engage with you, and thank you very much for
that. Okay, so if the panelists can come back up, that'd be great. Okay, questions? Yes?
Yeah. Howard, just to emphasize your Lily example, which I think I know a little about, crossing around $1,000 to stay out of jail. Releasing the documents. You have to understand that Daniels, who was president of Lilly, was the head of the OMB under Bush. He's now the governor of Indiana. And that TMAP project was a project that used Texas, okay? The Bush, Texas, when Bush was governor. He gave them entree to write the standards that called for the use of that Texas. The other expensive drugs. I can say all of that without fear of paying more money or going to jail. Now, if you want more detail about how the corruption runs to the FDA, I can tell you that you can Google my name, E-G-I-L-M-A-N, and criminal, and you'll find in some New York Times stories. With respect to the Arab world, I've got a project working with Suez Canal School and Sudan. And I'm a little more optimistic. The Suez School, which is the only CLP school in the Arabic-speaking world, has projects going on in Yemen and hasn't stared at it before. I think that was problematic or acute. That led to it. And the Suez School has been approached by the government to redo the health system in as a model. And their model is community-oriented primary care, which is, you know, is Al-Mahada and very political. Suez and Jazeera is the best health system, primary health system, in all of Africa as a model. And they've just been proposed by the tier. So that model is going to be so there are, I think, a lot of progressive things going on in Africa, in northern Africa and southern Africa, and they're now communicating with each other. Because Jazeera is now participating in South Sudan to give their model to the rest of southern Africa.
Sergeant Board, do you want to comment on that?
Perhaps I'll let Howard, the rest of the first comment.
Okay, do you want to go first?
Thanks for your comment, David. I guess two responses. You referred to corruption, and I have been trying to rethink that concept in terms of the structural characteristic of the state. The kinds of overlapping interests, conflicting interests, and so forth that characterize the relationships that you describe, I have come to believe that actually is not so much corruption as the inherent structure of how the state operates in this period of capitalism. It's this revolving door that means a functional overlap in the role of the state and in the role of the corporate world. And my own feeling is that we really need to be more thoughtful, let me say, and consider some of the subtleties of this as we go about our work in advocacy for the National Health Program, for changes in the educational system, in international policy, and so on. I also want to just refer to, if I may, to the comment about the Arab world and refer to this more generically. It's also my perception and findings, let's say, in Latin America, that what you're describing in certain parts of the Arab world actually is a worldwide phenomenon now, and there's much to be optimistic about. The ability of the dominant nations now to persist in the imperial policies has actually declined enormously. Part of this is reflected by the weakening of the capitalist economy internationally, a very fragile system now, and partly by the rise of resistance and alternative projects along the lines that you say, which we also see happening in all the regions of the world now. A refusal to continue to accept these kinds of dominant models and also exploitation that's been so fundamentally part of the history of empire and the relationships between empire and public health. So I actually feel this is a period of history that's changed, that all of us, in one way or another, need to be thoughtful about and to try to figure out how we as individuals and the groups with which we work are going to relate to this tremendous shift that involves pretty much a collapse of the capitalist system worldwide as we've known it, and a shift to something different, which is both scary and very invigorating.
Thank you very much for your comments. I think we all would agree with you that that these and many other experiments are actually encouraging. However, I want to perhaps place that in relation to a characteristic of an old versus new public health. Perhaps the old public health that we have been working with, and actually perhaps a good part of the book was based on, is a reformist ideology. Is that you want to expand primary health care, you want to improve health governance, you want to strengthen evidence-informed policy making, you know, all of these issues. And this is important to do, and we have to start there as we pursue the change. However, perhaps the new public health that we can dream of or think about or strategize together about is a bit more radical. I mean, it acknowledges the importance of all of this, but needs to see it in a broader and more radical project for change. That's all I'm arguing for.
Okay. Yes.
Oh yeah, and I forgot, I'm sorry. Yeah, the question is about my website, which I forgot to put up the very last slide. So it's publichealthandsocialjustice.org.